Okay, so our next presentation is, I think, is it?
Charles Allen, and then we have Monique Merck, the encampment coordinator, deputy mayor of Health.
Is Monique here?
Monica
here? Sorry, is my. All right, I'm going to do it because I know Monica was on here first, if you don't mind.
No, I thought that it was for her to do a presentation, and I'm here to help make sure we
yes.
talk about it.
So, steps. Monica, whenever you're ready, we'd love to have you. Welcome. Thank you so much.
So we define an encampment as a permanent, unmovable structure that is present even when the resident isn't. So it could be a tent, it could be a accumulation of belongings, but the resident returns to it. So if you see an individual sitting on the sidewalk or on a park bench, even if they sleep there every night, if they wake up and they take their stuff with them, that's not an encampment. So it is a permanent structure. And if it's one tent, one individual, that's also an encampment. It doesn't have to have a certain amount of individuals or structures. So I do want to let you know for reference, the district has at least 30 known encampments, and our office has the capacity to conduct maximum 4 cleanup engagements per week. So maximum every month you can engage 16, and that's still pretty high. If we only do it on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and if we have cleanups, say in Noma or in Whitehurst, that will take multiple hours and we can't do another cleanup afterwards. So just for reference where we are with our capacity. So how our encampment engagement process works, I receive a referral either from a constituent or a community partner about an encampment that's new or an encampment that's fallen off our radar. Our outreach workers go and assess the site, they speak with the residents, see what services they're connected to, what services they need. They're also looking for any public health or safety concerns. So the way our office defines some examples of public health and safety risks are presence of rodents, or if we see accumulation of trash that would attract rodents, such as a large accumulation of food that's sitting out for multiple days, multiple weeks, any type of observable biohazard, such as human waste or drug paraphernalia, needles, anything like that, or if we see an encampment that is completely blocking a sidewalk. So in order for that to be a public safety hazard, we require a wheelchair to be able to pass on a sidewalk. And if it can't, that's a public safety hazard, and we speak to the residents, see if they can move it. If not, we conduct the engagement. So if the site is determined to have public safety and public safety health risks, you can either do one of two things. We can do an immediate disposition or we can do a standard disposition. So an immediate disposition, if there are immediate health risks or safety risks, such as a grill or a propane tank specifically underneath an underpass, when that happens, myself and the DPW crew go and confiscate the grill, and then DDOT posts the signs a day after stating an immediate disposition occurred. We also have outreach workers go out and explain why we removed those items. We generally try to do that within 3 days. That doesn't always happen because the DPW crew obviously have their routes and scheduling, but that's what we try to stick to. More often than not, we do standard dispositions, which is where we post signs, 14 days notice, stating this is where we'll be conducting a cleanup. Our outreach workers go at least twice, if not 3 times in those 3 weeks. Various community partners also go and connect with the residents to see what services they're interested in, if they're aware of what shelter options they have, and really try to engage them. The morning of the engagement, myself and my outreach workers go to the site about an hour and a half before it begins, which is at 10 a.m., so we get there at 8:30, 9 a.m., inform the residents of the cleanup again, and just tell them that anything that's left on site after 10 a.m. is subject to removal. So if, for example, there is a tent left at a site, it is a full engagement cleanup, we don't know who it is. We ask the residents, do you know whose tent this is? If we get confirmation, yes, that tent is abandoned, a person left, I will still look through the items and see if there's anything of value, any documents, social security card, anything like that, and we sort of VHS. If we get confirmation from community residents saying, yes, that is, you know, Jane Doe's tent, she's been hospitalized, she, you know, had an issue, then we do make exceptions. We don't want to leave anybody in a bad spot. We understand that sometimes things come up. So we do do that courtesy every now and then. So a few things. We can do a full engagement cleanup, which is where we request the residents to remove the belongings that they want, only if the hypothermia alert is off the night prior to the engagement, the hypothermia alert is off the morning of the engagement, and there's not steady precipitation coming down. If we notice any lingering odors around and we do a full engagement, we do have the option to power wash. So we have that contract, and we also have a contract with DPW for biohazard removal. So we have both of those options. And by 10 a.m., full engagement cleanup, we have MPD, VDOT, DPW, DHS, and DVH on site, ready to make sure everything will run smoothly. We're safe, and we have DHS there to provide any type of services to the clients that are interested in that.
Could you run through those initials again?
I'm sorry? Oh, yes. So it's the MPD, the Metropolitan Police Department. We have DDOT, DPW, DPH, and DHS. We also have community partners. So Community Connections comes if it's in this cluster, and then Miriam's Kitchen or Pathways. So we have a pretty coordinated effort in that regard. So a few limitations in conducting our cleanup engagements. We are only able to conduct engagements on DC public property. We cannot engage or conduct cleanups on private property or federal land like NPS parks. We are able to conduct outreach and provide services, let them know, hey, you know, this individual wants to move and see if we can help them coordinate those efforts, but we can't do a cleanup. So letting everybody know that. Another limitation is our ability to do a full engagement cleanup is very dependent on weather and temperature. So if the National Weather Service activates a hypothermia alert the night prior to a cleanup, the morning of a cleanup, we can only do trash only. And for those of you, does anybody know what a hypothermia alert means?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Yes? Good. Okay. You don't have to sign up. And so when we do trash only, we don't request the residents to move their tent just because it's extremely cold weather or there's inclement weather. We don't want to put them at risk. Our first priority is always health and safety. And so these precautions are in place because when we conduct engagement, obviously we don't want to put them at risk. We want to make sure that they do have shelter. And we can also cancel the cleanup if we believe that it's pouring down too much, or if it's an engagement where we know that the resident won't be giving up any trash. So if they claim all of their belongings and we can't get anything, we'll cancel it and resettle for a different time. So we can do that as well. So that is the general overview of how our office manages and coordinates the encampment process. But I'd be happy to answer any questions if you might have them.
All right.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Crystal Alexis, 301. First, I want to state, you refer to them as residents. I've also seen them referred to as our most vulnerable neighbors. They are not residents under DC laws. If you look up DC laws, they are not considered DC residents, so please don't call them residents. And please don't call them my most vulnerable neighbors either. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I've lived in 6301 for over 20 years. And I've never seen what I'm seeing now. I get calls and emails all the time. We have an encampment right near four elementary schools by two parks. There are men defecating on the sidewalks in front of young families just trying to walk under the bridge to get to Whole Foods or get to Navy Yard. I mean, this is an issue, and it sounds like, no offense, you guys are doing everything possible to make things really nice for those guys. Every couple of weeks, you clean it out for them. You maybe offer them some services. Why aren't we trying to place them into a homeless shelter? It seems like if they just want to stay where they're staying, we'll clean it out every couple of weeks.
Yeah, so we do strongly push homeless shelters and other type of long-term stability options. And we have, again, various outreach workers that come weekly to work with them. There are various reasons why people reject shelter. They might have bad experience, they might have PTSD, substance abuse, mental health. So we keep all of those factors. We're very aware of them, and we are not in the business of forcing somebody to go into a shelter. We offer it, and we have a shelter hotline to transport them if they want it, especially during hypothermia season. But again, we cannot force anybody to go into shelter.
How did you get the people in the K Street encampment to move?
Yeah, so that was a, like I said, in terms of safety hazard. So they were blocking the sidewalk completely, and we were noticing people walking on the street, and we noticed that even residents coming out of their tents were stumbling into the street. So it was a concern, and so we've been trying to work with them for years, for the past year, trying to get them to like move, see how we can rearrange tents, but it wasn't working, and so for the safety, we had to close it down.
Let me get to Chandra here.
So how many of these encampments have you been to? Have you spoken to the residents, as you call them residents,
yes.
or people who are occupying them?
Yes. I've been to plenty of them. I don't have the exact number, but...
Okay. So why aren't they going to shelters?
Again, various reasons, so...
No, there's some specific reasons. What do they tell you?
A lot of them say they're not comfortable with sheltering. A lot of them say they feel safer outside.
Because? I've been there, I've hung out with them, I've talked to them.
With shelters. They're concerned that if they're...
Have you been to one of the shelters?
I'm sorry?
Have you been to one of the shelters?
Yeah, I've been to four of the shelters.
And they're perfectly fine?
I think they're nice. I think they work. I think a big problem is, or not a big problem, I think a concern for the residents might be the location. So 801 East is southeast, and that might be difficult for residents to get to. Again, we have our shelter van, so we do have transportation. But again, I mean, there's various reasons why individuals don't have shelter.
Pop in here. Hi, I'm Jessica Smith. I'm also the deputy mayor's office. Every single person is different. Everyone here in this room is different and has different preferences and different beliefs and different backgrounds. And so people make decisions differently. And so why I might not feel comfortable going to a shelter, Monica may feel completely comfortable based off of her background. People give us various reasons. We're actually in the process right now of redoing our low barrier shelter system. We're completely rebuilding 801 cement shelter from the ground up. We're completely rebuilding Harriet Tubman Women's Shelter. We're renovating New York Avenue Men's Shelter. We're renovating Blair and Emory Shelter. We know that some of the things that people cite as reasons for not wanting to go to shelter are perfectly legitimate, and so we're working with our budget team and with our team on the ground at DHS, Department of Human Services, to be able to redo and upgrade our shelter system to address some of those concerns that we hear from residents around the city.
I have one follow-up question. Where are these tents coming from?
So a lot of them are from residents. So from house residents, they will give it to them. I've also heard that the opening of the Walmart on, Street, that being so available to tents, that's increased it as well. But we've noticed a lot of house residents give belongings to our encampment residents.
So you're saying residents are giving people giving all these tents to?
Tents, mattresses, chairs.
Yeah, I will just note that like we hear a lot of mixed concern from residents, and those mixed concerns may even be in the room tonight. We get a lot of concerns about people who want us to do more and think we're not doing enough, and we get a lot of concerns, as I know the councilwoman's office does as well, that we're doing too much and that we need to back off and that we're not being respectful. So I do just want to note that there is a lot of tension and a lot of differing views around this topic. So we do see some groups that are actually giving these folks.
Yeah. So Harriet Tubman, that's fascinating.
Right.
Because we were told that you guys were closing Harriet Tubman, and because you're closing Harriet Tubman, that was why we were going to have the change in the F1 parcel. Are you telling me that we're about to have two homeless shelters on Reservation 13?
I'm absolutely not telling you that. We are
Not what you just said.
Can I please clarify? Thanks.
Sure, let's go.
So we are still looking for a different location. We are closing the Harriet Tubman shelter on Hill East. We are looking for a new location somewhere around the city. We're looking at all areas of the city to relocate and build, potentially from the ground up, a new Harriet Tubman shelter. So I can't give you the specifics on Hill East, but that is not what I'm saying, that we're rebuilding it there or even renovating the one that's on Hill East. We're building a new shelter somewhere else at an unidentified location at this time.
When is the Harriet Tubman shelter closing?
I don't know. We don't have a new space identified.
So you really shouldn't come here and start talking about Harriet Tubman, because that is a sore subject, as we all know. So what else can you tell me about Harriet Tubman, besides the fact that you're redoing it?
That we have the budget dollars to be able to build a new shelter at a new location, which we are still trying to identify.
How much money do you have?
I'd have to follow up with you. It's based on several different factors in terms of the vouchers that go into it and also the rebuilding of the shelter.
Why don't you go into that detail?
I just told you that I can't go into detail about it. I'm just telling you to respond to your answer that we are addressing concerns that we've heard from different residents about the shelter conditions, and so we are working really hard to improve those shelter conditions. We're not here today to talk about Hillies, so I can't comment further on that. Yes?
I am curious about the thing that we did today at 695 Mill Street. It's not my single member district. It's my colleagues. I don't know, did you reach out to the ANC commissioner to let them know this was going to happen? What kind of outreach do you do to the neighborhood beyond community collect connections? Because if people are helping by providing tents, they kind of, I imagine,
yeah, I didn't know that was a desire. I can certainely email ANC members, let them know when there would be cleanups.
Yeah, that would actually be.
Yeah, if I just get
down there frequently, I read the sign.
Okay. Yeah. We also, we're happy to reach out, but just so you know, we also post all of our cleanups on our website.
Yeah. Right.
It's another example of ANC's having to go through the DC government and pulling information. I appreciate that it's posted. It's also, this is a volunteer position, and it's hard for us to cover all.
Totally understand. I was an ANC commissioner myself as well, so totally get that sentiment.
So, I thought the ANCs were part of the group that alert you to problems, and there is good communication about it.
They can be, yeah.
You both come to meet with us about the CVS tent encampment?
I wasn't there.
That was me.
That was you? No. Well, that worked. That had a good outcome. My question is, this is not a problem that's unique to D.C., and I'm wondering what agency or what part of your agency is looking around at the rest of the U.S. to see what are people doing that seems to be successful, because I would agree with Jennifer that we're making people more comfortable, but they're still here. And
do we have any questions or comments from the audience?
Hi, I just concurred and I agree with the Jen here. My kid goes to school right there. It's outrageous. It's right next to the park. It's right next to the school system. Something's got to change. You've mentioned a ton of parameters that you have, but you haven't mentioned schools. What way can you change the restrictions that if they can't walk down the street, we have to move them? How come we can't change it where it can't be near a school or a park?
So all the things that Monica mentioned in terms of how we operate and how our encampment protocol engagements work are part of district protocol, so they're written and administered through the city administrator's office. As some of you may know, we're actually currently in the midst of a lawsuit where people are suing the district for the amount of work that we do and saying that we shouldn't even be able to do what we are doing now, which is going and conducting cleanups. And so we have a team that looks at information from around the country. And I know people can be frustrated by how our protocol works. We're actually seen as one of the most effective and best jurisdictions in the country for responding to encampments. We are working with other interagency partners, interdistrict partners, to be able to figure out how we can do more. We do look at different issues that it's been brought to our attention before about should there be a restriction between a certain number of feet that we can enforce between schools and parks. That is something that is, you know, that's been brought up to leadership. But at this time, where we're at with our protocol and the lawsuit that we currently have, we don't feel like we are able to act on putting more restrictions of that nature in place at this moment. And just to note, additionally, on the other places around the country, we've seen where similar jurisdictions, maybe in LA, for example, have gone through a protocol process, have been sued, have lost that lawsuit, and have virtually the ability to do nothing to respond to a campus. They can't even go in and do a cleanup. We don't want to end up in that position, and so we just have to be really cautious about the protocol we have and really following what we have set.
One second, I'm gonna let her in.
I just wanted to follow up on Jessica. So Charles Allen is here. Is that something we could put into legislation or propose some sort of language that encampments can't be that close to, they're right on top of Garfield Park. That's where Capitol Day School, that's where they do their recess every day. I mean, they're right there. And you've got men defecating on the sidewalk during the day. I mean, you've got Van Ness on the other side. You've got St. Peter's, you've got Brent, and then Capitol Hill's right in the thick of it. Capitol Day School's right there. So can we do something where we say they're not allowed to move in so many feet or so many of a elementary school?
If we thought that was the right approach, the moment that we passed it, we would be sued. It would go straight to the courts, and I think to the team here's point, we would put the protocols that are in place that, again, they get it, I get it, from folks who say that they're horrible monsters doing too much, and how dare you remove these people that are unhoused, as well as people say you're not doing enough, so they catch it from both sides, as do I. They would be less likely to do the things they're doing currently.
Which is making it pretty nice for them, if you ask me. They're cleaning it up. They're, so I guess I think it's worth it. I think it would be nice if we've got... Charles, you've lived down the hill. We haven't had this in 20-something years, and all of a sudden we have encampments popping up everywhere. This isn't sustainable.
I'm happy to jump in here, too. I mean, the encampments that we've seen over the last few years have increased. We're not unique in this district. This is happening in cities all around the country. It's not new that we would have individuals experiencing homelessness in our city. We've had that for a very long time as well. We are trying to think through what are the ways to do this. To respond, Jerry, to one of your questions around what are some of the things we're doing, I've had conversations with the city administrator. He was just speaking with city administrators from around the country around different ideas around storage. So one of the biggest barriers that I hear of how do we get people into shelter, how do we move into stable housing, is that this is their entire life's possessions in the bags and in the tents. And so they will frequently not want to go into shelter because they would have to lose the very few things that they have left. So we are talking about how do we provide some type of storage so that people can actually put their things into something. From a shelter perspective, yeah, it's a really smart question around asking, like, what are some of the barriers? We are also, I know from the administrations, they're examining the policies. So, for example, if it's a couple, we have different policies based on which shelters you can or cannot go into. If you're a parent with an adult child, can you go into some shelters or not? There's a lot of restrictions based on the way in which we have traditionally had our shelter system. And so there, I know that the team is going through different policies and trying to figure out what would that look like. There are, to Chandra's point, I think significant barriers to the physical aspects of these. We have folks who I'll talk to that have gone into shelter and left because they could have been assaulted. They don't feel safe. They feel like they may get bed bugs for the very few items they do have. There's a myriad of reasons why. I want, like you, to have that person who is on a sidewalk in a tent. It's not the place we want anybody to be. I want them to get into shelter. I want them to get into their services. There is a complex range of reasons why some people will, and some people will not go into that. And we keep at it. The outreach workers pretty much know every single person by name. They know their story. They're working, trying to convince them. They're trying to build trust. They're trying to overcome substance use issues, mental health crises. All the challenges that they may be facing to get them into shelter. And it is a complex challenge and a problem.
Do you have some other questions in the audience?
We actually walked out.
I know. Oh.
Yeah, I'm Jack Gatch. I'm resident here on the Hill. I'd like to specifically know about what's happening with the encampment on 3rd Street underneath the expressway. A posting went up on January 7th, saying on January 21st there would be a cleanup. That didn't happen. I'm not sure why, but the cleanup did happen about 2+ weeks later on the 6th of February. Within 24 hours, it was completely rebuilt. It was never cleaned out completely. And on the afternoon of the 6th, there was still a lot of stuff left there. And then by noon the next day, all 6 tents were back in almost the exact configuration that they were before. And they're that way right now.
I'm happy to speak on that. So we canceled the engagement, as I said, we can do on the 21st because there was a cold weather emergency alert, which is even colder than that weather alert. So we are not going to ask anybody to get out of their tent in that weather. Half of the residents actually did move before we could even get there at 9 a.m. But at that point, we already canceled the pickup. So we rescheduled it on the 6th because we've been getting so many concerns. Honestly, when we were there, we did not notice any biohazards. We did not notice any human waste or any odors. We did not notice any needles. The residents moved, and they placed their trash in a bag for us to collect. yes, they returned. We cannot force anybody to not come back. But we did engage the cleanup, and we did leave and comply. And for the 6th, it was a hypothermia alert on. So again, we can't request them to move. They did, most of them did anyway. But we collected the trash, and we go there regularly to see if there are any biohazards that we have left.
So what is the plan?
To keep engaging, to see, keep offering shelter, to see if they'll work with our outreach partners and with the case managers for long-term stability plans. Otherwise, we will keep doing what we've been doing and clean up the day against when there's accumulation of trash.
So will there be a plan to clean up, posting for 2 weeks?
Yes. We have to do that for our protocol, right. Unless it meets the standard, I'm sorry, the immediate disposition criteria, we have to give 2 weeks notice.
Well, that's fine. I mean, that's reasonable. That's, I think that's very generous. Very unfair. But what I'm asking is, now that it's exactly the way it was before all this took place, are there plans to try to clean up again?
In March, yes. So we have to plan 2 weeks in advance. So every Tuesday and Thursday, we're going to conduct the cleanups. So for February, we're already booked up for Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we have a case conference every other Friday where we discuss cases where we want to engage and clean up at. So we will definitely keep that on our radar, keep it on our list, and try to do it on the list.
And also on just a couple streets up on 6th Street, there has been accumulation of stuff that's been there for years. And by your definition of an encampment, I think that falls under the definition because I've never seen a person close to it. But the several piles were there. Are you aware of it? Are there any plans to do anything about that?
So we were initially going to do an encampment there today. Given the rain, we decided to cancel it because residents came there, stated nothing is trash, and then we left. So again, because we have that lawsuit, we cannot go and determine what is trash, what is not. I went there anyway and spoke to him, and I said, you know, we have to reschedule. And he said people just keep giving him items and then he doesn't even ask for them. So he's willing to part with them. We just need to reschedule it. And the
benefit of rescheduling is that if we cancel it completely, we don't have to wait and post an additional 2 week sign to reschedule. So that's why we make judgment calls to sometimes, if someone's not going to give up trash anyway, we will cancel and reschedule because we can do it within 2 weeks and not have to post an additional sign. Just have to let them know 48 hours in advance. So we mind us making those judgment calls every day of like what the best course of action is in terms of the actual cleanup day.
Chandler?
So you talked about connecting them with resources. What does that look like? Do you tell them, hey, you should go X location at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning? Or what does that look like? Or do you bring the services to them?
So we have various outreach workers. So we ask them what kind of services they're interested in, if they need to be connected to food stamps, if they need IDs, if they need social security numbers, or social security card, if they're interested in employment, if they're interested in housing. So we do all of those services.
Right, so what happens after that?
So we keep working with them. So if they want an ID, we work with them until they have their ID, then we see the plan going forward. If they want housing through a voucher program, we see if they're eligible. We complete vulnerability index assessments to see if they are eligible, and if not, then we try to work with different options.
So do you have some sort of, I think of the individual education plan for people with disabilities, but similar. An individual
case plan. Yeah, case and so it's various people. We have our own outreach workers from our team that work with residents and encampments and kind of act as navigators or liaisons. We have folks from Community Connections who are here to probably speak better to the services they actually provide. We have outreach workers from DBH that focus particularly on substance abuse and mental health. And then we have outreach workers from the Department of Human Services. So we're constantly communicating amongst all the different outreach teams depending on the person's specific case plan. I'm sorry?
They provided those services at night?
So DBH works 24/7, and our new outreach teams with the providers work until 11 p.m. So we've extended the hours to not only cover daytime, but be able to provide later night services because we know that that's sometimes a better time for people to be able to connect. So, yeah.
So I think it needs some help, and I'm asking Councilmember Allen and a representative from Charles White's office.
Robert White.
Yes.
Yeah. We work really well together.
You do. I know. It's night. I invited DC agencies to come to a Hillies Task Force meeting. And I sent the invitation last week, haven't heard anything. The reason I need your help is because of the conversation we just had about Harriet Tubman. We were told that the F1 parcel was changing because the Harriet Tubman facility was closing. And the hope had been on the 24th that all the DC agencies would come and give us an update on the F1 parcel and the G1 parcel and DC General and the DC jail. So far, none of them have responded. We need them to come to this meeting because we do need affordable housing and we do need solutions. But what I have seen over the past 2 years is slow rolling, intransitive, and outright lies. So I'm just going to follow up with you guys afterwards and say, you know, any help you can give us in getting these agencies to the community meeting, because the community in which I live, at least, is frustrated, pissed, angry, distrustful of DC agencies right now because of what happened last fall and what continues to happen. So if you could just help us get in the room, that's great.
I'm happy to ask them to be there. Obviously, the agencies work for the mayor's office, not the council, but yeah, we'll absolutely help say, guys, we need you to be there, be responsive. If there's a scheduling conflict, they at least owe you the ability to say,
yes,
we have a scheduling conflict and we can't be there that night.
But
yeah.
I think they need to
tell me. Absolutely.
That.
I agree with you. Cool. 100%.
So do we have any more questions in that? We'll take one more question in the audience for...
Yeah, I just want to address this one more time. It is absolutely outrageous that we don't have any protection for our children. That is way too close to having a campus right there where they all play. You're telling me that you provide all these different protections and all these different services, but you can't do anything for our kids? You got to do something else. I mean, come on. I mean, there's got to be a way that
you can help me. Can you share a little more about your, how's your kid at risk? So I can understand.
Well, we play. My kids play at Garfield Park.
Mine too.
Okay, great. And everybody plays there, right? You've got that homeless encampment right there. They all come around there. They do different things. Do you have an encampment that close to the school system? It's just too close. I mean, can't we just have, like, you can't have it so they're blocking a sidewalk, right? So we have drug systems where you can't have, at least they used to, that you can't sell drugs within a certain vicinity of the school. I just don't understand why we can't have the same type of proximity away from a school for any campus. That just seems like a no-brainer.
Well, I want to create a nexus to understand and make sure we're thinking through what is the risk
safety.
Or perceived risk?
Safety. So, safety of our children.
Okay, so I talked with Commander King, for example, today. I've walked through this specific area myself.
Right.
My staff goes through it at least once a week
right.
to go check on it. Commander King walks through it all the time.
You're not a kid.
Wait a second. I asked Commander King, I said, what, help me understand, because if there's a public safety issue, we want you to respond to that. I don't want MPD to be the face of our response to homelessness, but if there's something illegal taking place, some criminality, we want you to be there, right? Commander King said, they do not see illegal activities taking place. She personally goes and walks in. So I want to try to be responsive. I also want to make sure I understand what is
the perceived
threat or risk.
I think I've been very, very clear. I think the perception is, not the perception, the fact, is that you have schools and you have a playground and you have a lot of kids that want to play in that area. And then you have...
What are
the
people in the sense doing in the playground? Like,
well,
where's the risk? That
well, you have them in an area and you have no idea what you're doing. When you say there's nothing going on there, there's other people that say differently. There's other things that they say that they're, as you're saying, they
I'm not saying anything. I'm saying Mayor King is
and you're
taking
that. You're taking that. But I just don't understand why you can't. You're basically saying, hey, look, we're not working with our kids. That's what I'm saying.
That's not at all what I'm saying.
Between a tent, which is somebody's home, and a house, which is somebody's home. They're living in the tent.
Okay, look.
But how would you not be close to school student? I mean,
it's very different. If you're living in a tent, obviously you're a transient person. Okay.
I just don't know about money or resources, but that doesn't mean you're transient.
You're a transient. So I'll
be honest, I'm not comfortable with the way you're describing people who are experiencing homelessness. I mean, there are individuals who experience homelessness who are working through health crisis, substance use crisis, and we have to...
And that's fine. And we provide a lot of services, but we are not...
Okay.
We are also close to schools.
Yes, we also have people who are homeless because they have been evicted from their homes. They have lost their jobs. There's a myriad of reasons why someone is experiencing homelessness. There is no one thing. And so to say that there's just the fact that someone is experiencing this in their life right now, none of us want to be in a tent. It would be the lowest of low. That is somehow, though, makes that person to be inherently a risk to children. I want to be very careful with that. I absolutely want us. If we see illegal activity taking place, you see something that is criminal, I want to engage in BD. I have been engaging with Commander King, for example. She, I mean, to her credit, she's personally walking this area to make sure she looks for it. I'm grateful for that. When I have the commander of MPD coming back to me and saying, I'm not seeing illegal activity taking place, but if it is, call me, let me know. We will get right there. So I don't believe that just the proximity to a park or a school is somehow I'm going to pass a law to say that that's illegal. If there is a risk, I want to make sure we understand and fully think through what that risk is and how to mitigate that, if that's what there is. But I'm trying to make sure I understand what the risk is to make sure that we have the appropriate response.
Okay.
If we respect and disagree on that, I understand.
Yeah, if you're walking down the street and you have to go over a sidewalk,
sorry,
that's
Councilman
Hamlet. You're not quite sure if you're going to turn that, right? That's a safety issue. Same type of thing, like the kids are the same area, right? So,
I just wanted to state the person that came to me about the man who defecated in front of her husband and her daughter, a small daughter, a couple weeks ago, is a DC elected official. It's Ashley. So, you know, Ashley Carter McClay, she's the one who came to my door and said, I'm horrified. We were walking, and a man just pulled down his pants and defecated right in front of us, right in front of the tents. So that's somebody who's an elected official who's coming to me, which is kind of sad that she couldn't go to her colleagues and say, hey, look, this is happening. What are you going to do? I mean, honestly, what I'm hearing is DC does a great job enabling these encampments. We do a fantastic job doing that. And that because of a fear of a lawsuit, we're not willing to take any restrictive actions. And just FYI, please do not badger people who come to bring up issues. I don't appreciate that.
Oh.
So I'm gonna conclude this. If we have more questions, we can always bring it out in the hall. I definitely want to make sure that everyone gets their questions answered, or you can always email Charles Allen, you can always email us. We'll send those questions or answers or questions over to the office so we can get them answered. But just to kind of end this, because we do have a lot of things on our agenda, the only thing I want to say about this is there is a balancing act between our homeless, I will say homeless residents, and our other residents, I guess you can say, people that, you know, our other residents that are here in D.C. That balance, yeah, I don't know.
All our residents.
Yeah, all residents. I'm trying to figure out the best.
Our residents and our
homeless residents. Yeah, right. I'm trying to use the right adjective, so I do apologize for that. But I will say the balance is off kilter slightly, in the sense of the word that some residents feel that they don't have enough power to sit there and manage certain activities that they don't deem appropriate, such as what we're talking about. You know, they have tents near parks and they don't want tents near parks for safety reasons, perceived safety reasons or safety reasons. I don't know what the answer is, but something needs to be done about it. I think there's a ray of hope, though, that everyone should be thinking about. The idea that we're actually talking to our homeless residents and finding out the challenges that they're having going into our shelters is the key. Understanding what their needs are and what they're looking for and tweaking what our services are to address those issues over time will fix that. It's going to be an ongoing issue. It is not a Washington, D.C. issue. It is a United States issue. You can pick any major city, and they're dealing with the same challenges we are.
One point. I know you want to wrap up. I know you have a full agenda, so I'll try to be brief. But we're about to start our budget cycle. All right. So the mayor is going to be proposing a budget at the end of March. The council will start their budget hearings. If I will respectfully disagree with anybody who says that they think that we are doing too much when it comes to trying to move people into housing. But if we were to not do the things that we're doing to try to help move people into housing, if we were not to do the things where we're trying to provide these different services, D.C. is actually in a much better position in terms of what you see in terms of encampments than cities all around the country. And those are the cities that have said, we will not provide housing. We will not move towards creating better shelter systems. We will not do mental health outreach and substance use work. If that's where we want to go, it will not improve. If the perception is, I don't want to see the encampments, I think that they may be some type of risk. If that's the perception, reducing the things we do will not help at all and will actually make things worse. We have an opportunity when the budget's coming up, and I assume the mayor's going to put forward, and then, of course, our job is to ask the tough questions of what it is she's put forward in her budget. I will hear no shortage of people who come in and tell us and recommend do this, that, or the other, and make changes. But it is also an opportunity for all of us to engage in that conversation. If you think there's ways in which we need to do things differently, if you think there's things we should fund differently, I absolutely want to hear from you about that. The mayor does her town halls, and I don't know what the dates are, but I think every or so. I did my Ward 6 budget town hall, which comes after that. We're doing that at Maury Elementary School this year. I don't know the exact date, but we'll make sure we share it with all the commissioners. Because that's a great opportunity for me to hear your feedback and reactions to what you're seeing the mayor propose. That's a place where I think you can kind of take your kind of optimism, Ryan. That would also be a place where we welcome to hear your feedback. Where are we missing the mark? Where do we need to do more? If you think we need to do less, I would caution. If we do less, we will not improve the situation.
I have a quick message from Commander Kane. We do take illegal activity very seriously, so if folks are seeing drug transactions, you really are encouraged to call 911. And she also suggests that everyone come to the next PSA meeting for this area, and that will be on March 24th at Caper Community Center at 6:30 p.m.
Which
6:30 p.m.?
I'm sorry.
PSA 106.
PSA 106, and it'll be for also for PSA 105.
I just wanted to just quickly say that to me, one of the issues here is like, I don't think the people in D.C. have a really full understanding of what these encampments are. And tonight I have learned, and I didn't know walking in here tonight, I didn't know probably any of this. And I'm very grateful that you came tonight. I really learned a lot, and I'll try to spread the information.
Thank you so much.
And to that point, we do have an FAQ that we're leaving out there.
Will you leave your contact information on those?
So if anyone has any questions or anything, they can get back to you in the audience, our residents here.
It's on the front.
Right. Both of you?
So it's encampment.reports.
Which goes directly to Monica.
Okay, perfect.
And so, what about yours?
I can leave my cards up here as well.
Perfect.
That'd be awesome.
Yep. That'd be perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we're going to move on to our next section. I do apologize for pushing, so thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
We're going to move to our community and commission announcements and speakouts. This is a time where you get a maximum of 5 minutes or three to 5 minutes.
Two minutes, actually.
I do apologize to talk about anything going on in the community or anything. So
there's some encampments on the Bridge.
Okay.